Abraham Schaufeld, Reel 2.
He was, well, I think it's Heckers, who was not Jewish. He, yes, he escaped. Yes, he escaped, not because, yes, I thought, you know, if you have bad Heckers.
Contact the papers, you know, and, it was, I show you a little bit what I had an aunt who was a Slovak citizen, because she was married once to a Slovak and got divorced, but she was involved in a Slovak passport on which it wasn't written that she was Jewish. So she lived, she wasn't deported to live where all the deported, she stayed there. But of course the Germans wanted to get rid of her. So then they arrested her on some trumped up charge and put her into prison, you see. And if she hadn't stayed in the same place, with her passport, she probably could have survived somewhere. She had moved away, but they didn't know her, that she was Jewish. You know, because she had a place, but we didn't think, nobody could have imagined at first. I mean, yes, the Germans were bad, the Germans, but that they would do what they did, that we couldn't imagine. Well, then they brought us to the railway station. It was a quite ordinary train, and they cleared a whole carriage, I suppose. And we were there under guard, and we still had our suitcases with our things, and we came. I don't know the name of the railway station. It wasn't Sakra, which was a small place, but somewhere there. And there was a bus standing there. And my suitcase, which was sort of a cardboard suitcase, I remember, put on top of the bus, and the bus started, and my suitcase fell off. It was being cardboard, it all fell out. But the bus stopped, and they allowed me to put the things in again, and we came to Sakra. Now, Sakrau, it was in the middle of nowhere. It was what they called a Reichsautobahn Lager, which means that we were building the German motorway, the Autobahn. It was run by the Organisation Todt. And the guards were not SS, they were, I don't know, they belonged to the Organisation, they were armed, but it just had one. It's just a barbed wire around it. And the work, the Germans systematized by every 10 kilometers, they had a camp. So that, and each camp completed this 10 kilometers of the motorway. And the camps were not necessarily Jewish, they could be other prisoners, you see, Polish prisoners, I don't know, Polish prisoners. And this one was all Jewish. The foremen were quite, used to beat us occasionally, but the work was hard. And, but the food wasn't, it wasn't starvation, I don't think, no, it wasn't good, but, and we still could receive parcels from home, the same thing. And posts from home. That was 1942, believe it or not. I remember that there were some Jews who were sent back from the Russian front. They were sent to Russia to widen and to narrow the railway gauge from the Russian to the German. And they got typhoid and things like that, and they were sent back to Germany. They showed you, no, they weren't shot there, they were sent back. And then they suffered from what you call it, frostbite and things. And we were still very, very sort of innocent. And I can remember I was washing in the washroom, and there had this appel. And everyone rushed out, and I stayed there, and I still washed, you know. And everyone was lined up on the parade ground there. And I came out, and this sort of hit me at the dungeon, and I could not say, when there's a prayer, you leave everything, you run, you know. And I. well, I learned my lesson there. And then one day, we weren't there that long in Sakral, a few weeks, or a couple of months maybe. They sent us again away, and I think it was by bus, I think, again, to the mountains near Czechoslovakia there, and that was Gravis.
This camp at Sakra, though, it's very interesting. You were saying you were building an autobahn.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
What was it efficient, you know, the sort of organisation of that and the use of labour, would you say?
In that place, it was fairly efficient because they had those miniature railways there and excavators too. And we worked very hard, I think it must have been, yeah. At that point, I said, yes.
It was real work you were doing, wasn't it? Not work for the sake of humiliating you.
This was work, no doubt about it. Now, there were four proper German engineers there, and four. But this was... Greenwich was a camp. It was a sort of old... I don't know if it was a mill or something. It was a very tall building with small windows, very primitive. The population was quite hostile outside.
This was near the Czech border, this place.
I think it must have been near the Sudetenland.
Well, how was this manifested? You know, you say the population was hostile.
Well, when we went to work from there, through the town, for instance, you know, the remarks and the, you know, you never got a friendly thing on. And when we worked in this, it was a brickworks, old brickworks, which we were converting to a sort of Wehrmacht, German army storeroom of some sort. And the engineer in charge was a real sadist. He used to come and kick and beat, you know. And the food was absolutely disgusting there. You know, it was really bad. It was sort of greens with a dirt in it still. But even there, people could still receive parcels and could still write, which is a strange thing.
Were you hearing from your mother? Because you said the last sight of your brother.
Yes,
when you were taken away that day, were you able to say goodbye to your mother?
No, not to my mother, no, or to my brother, because I was taken straight from the factory. The only thing I did manage to do is, as I say, shout to my brother. And so my words. No, I couldn't speak to them anymore. I later wrote to them, yes. Yeah, that I did. So the work was really hard. And then one day, this German engineer who was limping, though, I think he was limping, yes? That must have been the reason he wasn't in the army. He said, I want 20 carpenters. Well, maybe there were three carpenters. So he came along and said, you're a carpenter, you're a carpenter, you're a carpenter. And he came to me and said, you're a carpenter. And I said, I'm not a carpenter. So he kicked me. But one thing I cannot do is sew a piece of wood straight. I really cannot do it. Never could. But no, I'm a carpenter. No argument with him, you know. So we went into this place and it was quite simple. It wasn't complicated carpentry. It was sort of dovetailing things, you know, and the foreman used to sort of pencil in what he wanted us to do, and we used to go with a hammer and what you call it, chisel, and do this. And something good, I couldn't do it straight. And this German cottoned on very quickly, you see, that I couldn't do it, okay? And he hit me, you see, that I'm a sabotaging, you know, and I tried to tell him, you know, and even the German foreman said, he's not a carpenter. Even the German foreman took pity on me. He's not a carpenter. Let him go, you know. Nothing doing, you know. He just gave him some sort of sadistic pleasure, you know. That he came and and can say to me, I could say that it wasn't properly, I couldn't do it. Even some people tried to help me, I just couldn't do it. And anyway, then one day, and it was lucky that the German engineer wasn't there, they wanted some carpenters in a different place called Lauterhütte. So, of course, whom are they going to get rid of carpenters like me, you see? So they put me there with some others, you know. And I thought, I was so relieved, you know, when I was sent away from there. There were about maybe 15, 20 of us sent to Lauterhütte. We came to Lauterhütte, it was a steel foundry, a steel mill, big steel mill. It was a completely empty building, and we had to set up the beds. They were preparing by then to receive Jews from Western Europe. We didn't know that, of course. And at first, we were setting up this camp, and they sent us, but a lot of it was in my neck of woods, it was nearby where I come from. And so, and when we set up, then suddenly, one day we returned from war, I remember, and there were all those Jews from France, Holland, Belgium, you know. And then they still had, the strange thing is, they were sitting there, you know, in their own clothes still. They were still, I remember one was smoking a cigar. And they were eating whatever they had food ahead. And they were told they were taken from those countries to a railway junction in, I think it was Kozel, and separated from the families. And the men were sent to Lauterhütte. And they had no idea what it was to be. Of course, some of them were quite elderly too, you know. And they were quite sent to work, and then we were building a different new factory halls for the Germans. By that time, they were already concerned about the bombing of inside Germany. So they tried to remove the armament factories further from the into the east. They were in a hurry really to build those new factories or convert old factories. And some of our people worked in Lauterhütte, others were sent to nearby towns. And I was sent, strangely enough, to the town where I come from. and my grandfather was a publican, you know, he was very well known. So I sort of could crouch a little bit here and there. As I say, but I can still remember that there were Russian prisoners of war by that time there too. And they were in such bad condition, I can remember. I remember one Russian prisoner of war was taking some potato peels out and he was shot. I think, if anything, they were in the worst condition than we were at that time, anyway. And they looked for somebody. At first I worked on this miniature railway, which was taking airs and foundations there away. After a while, because I spoke German, they wanted somebody to go with two local people who were demolishing, dynamiting old foundations. So I was going with those two, which were quite decent fellows. I could speak the language of a local, you know, it wasn't the Jesus of it. I sort of remembered the name of the pub once, you know, it wasn't. So all I was doing then, we were sort of drilling holes in the foundations, you see, and sticking dynamite in. And then, of course, we had the tail, the things. And I used to go where I remember with the red flag and a trumpet, you know, and then we had to clear the site before you were demolishing it. And this was a nice job, you see, and occasionally the people used to give me some bread. You know. And also my mother too got through somebody. There was a Polish fellow who used to, I don't know how my mother got in touch with him, but he used to operate the concrete mixer on the site there. And he had a sort of billy can or something. And there he used to have something for my mother, bread or something, and a letter usually. Now this was dangerous stuff for both of us, I think. But he pretended that he didn't know, and I used to go up there, or somebody of my friends, and they used to take his item, and I used to read them very quickly somewhere and destroy the evidence, and that's it, and eat the food. I don't think I could write back. I don't remember that I ever wrote back. Maybe I did. It's possible that I did. And put it in the billy can. I cannot remember quite.
What was your mother doing then, at that stage? What had happened to her?
Well, there was still not a ghetto. There still wasn't a ghetto in Sultan, not a closed ghetto anyway. So they were still employed by, as far as I know, by the German firm. I don't know how she scrounged it, but she certainly, it wasn't much. Usually some bread or a piece of cheese, and there wasn't a great deal. And yes, and then I was with those people who were blasting the foundations away. And on Friday, they used to finish quite early. And we had a little hut on the side. So I used to be sitting there in the hut. And on this day, it was very warm, very hot. And I was tired, and I fell asleep in the hut. And everybody assembled for the camp. And I was asleep, and they looked for me everywhere. And when I stumbled out there lately, I said, oh God, I'm in trouble here, you see. And the sun was hitting me there. And I tried to escape. That's it. Anyway, went to the camp. I was flogged in front of everybody. And I was really, you know, my skin was absolutely, well, lacerated. I don't know how bad it was. There was a doctor in the camp, I don't know. Anyway, I had to go to work the next day. And the camp commander hit me. And on that Sunday, I had to go to the guard room. And they beat me up again, threw me down the stairs with the guard, if I remember. And I don't know that they knew that I was a local boy, and maybe that I don't know, you know. I don't know how, whether they had any documents to that effect. Anyway, that was the accusation of it, trying to escape. In a way, I was lucky enough to be beaten up. Yeah.
It sounds quite a severe beating, though, from what you say. And this flogging, what did they flog you with?
Well, at first I was beaten with a whip, you know, with what do you call it, one of the Germans had those ox things, you know. Then I was just punched by the commander, remember? He came into this hall. And then I had to report to the guard, and I had to lean over a stool and hit me again. And threw me down the stairs, I remember. And
you still had to work after that,
oh,
did
yes,
you?
Yes. And not only to work, but they put me into the sort of punishment thing. So after that, I wasn't allowed to go out of the camp anymore, to the place where I usually was, you know. I had to stay in the camp, where they were also building a new factory. And there was this small group of people there, 15, 30. And this German foreman, there were two of them, one elderly, one younger, who had this reputation for brutality. And the work was quite hard. We were sort of demolishing foundations, but with a hammer, those sledgehammers, you know. But the lucky thing was that we were in the camp, and there were some women in the camp, separated, because they used to work in the kitchen, and I used to get some food from them. So that was the plan. The German foreman, for some reason, after he used to kick everybody and punch him, to me he was very kind. I spoke German, and this is a work, manual work I could do, especially if I have extra food.